Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic. Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic. I was going to say, as always, we have one as always this week. I'm going to get to that guy in a minute. He's in an airport somewhere. But the non-usual suspects, we got some fantastic guests on the show this week. My guy, Vinny Goodwill, national NBA writer for Yahoo Sports, host of the Good Word with Goodwill show on Yahoo's Ball Don't Lie channel. Also, Sirius XM radio host, my guy, Vinny. What's up, sir? How are you?
Hey, I'm glad you got that all right. I really
that was so much work, Vinny. I had to do my research.
Dude, it's a lot of work for me to say that every week on the podcast. So I'm just thankful and appreciative that somebody else got to do it.
I mean, you got a fire name for the pod. You know what I mean? Good Word with Goodwill.
Sounds churchy. It sounds very churchy. And I'm not a churchy person.
But it's happened to work. Blatantly churchy. It kind of taps into the soul and makes you want to lean in and just listen a little bit. You know,
I like that. Lean into I like the that soul. Too. Taps into the soul. You like that law?
It's great, man. Blessed with your name.
That was not convincing, Law. That was not convincing. All right, let me bring Law in here. We got Law Murray. I mean, to say Clippers beat writer, especially this week, does not capture it. Law has had himself a couple of days. You know, he's covering the James Harden trade. We got a man down. I don't want to put his business in the streets, but he had to do a little Lakers stuff last night. He's just wearing multiple hats. He's doing podcasts left and right. He's on his way to Playa Vista to the Clippers training facility here in a little bit to go say hello to the beard who's getting introduced after that massive blockbuster trade with Philly. Law Murray, I'm afraid to ask you how much sleep you've gotten the last couple of days, but how you hanging in?
I mean, sleep is an illusion. So,
what are you, Kyrie today? That sounds like a Kyrie.
I hope not. Hey, look, it's not even 9 a.m. I haven't been to the breakfast nook yet. I'm on vibes right now. So I'm glad to be talking with y'all this morning.
All right, we're gonna lift you up today, and I won't rub it in that I got my second cup of coffee to my left. So just live, you know, vicariously through me. We also got a dude who couldn't even be bothered to bring his mic and really is only here because he deserves to kind of, you know, get his comeuppance when it comes to his Indiana Pacers hype. They had a bad night last night. And Fred Katz, you know, typical host on the show and guy who was really feeling himself the last couple of weeks talking about Tyrese Haliburton and the Pacers about to go win themselves an in-season tournament or maybe even a Larry O'Brien trophy. Fred, what happened to your Pacers? And I don't know what airport you're in, but what the hell?
Well, it makes sense that right as I'm about to talk, there's an announcement because everything that I say probably should be spoken over at this point. But I will say, in one corner of this podcast, we got goodwill. We got churchiness. We got spirit. In the other corner, we have the other side of the world. We have law, right? And then in this corner, we have faith. We have belief that a team can lose by 51 in November and still finish in the top six in the East by the end of the year. And I believe it. I think we all know if Tyrese Haliburton played in that game, the Pacers would have won by like 7 points.
I think. Hold on, I'm going to interrupt Fred. Hey, Vinny and Law, guess what? This man is so addicted to this topic that that last sentence, if Tyrese played, they would have won by seven. He literally sent a note to us indicating that if he didn't make it on the pod, he wanted that to be his official statement about the Pacers. I was asked to read this on air as if his opinion on the Pacers is so important that he had to offer this nuance.
It's true. They have actually, okay, they got killed by Boston. They got annihilated by Boston.
You got 15 seconds. We're not talking Pacers long.
They got annihilated by Boston. But the offenses looked really good in a lot of moments. They had the tough loss to Chicago, which I think they probably should have won that game. But I'm still on the Pacers. Andrew was like, Amick's got to come on, and he's got to bully you about the Pacers for 2 minutes before you board this flight to Milwaukee. So I came on. But I also just really wanted to hear Law's thoughts on James Harden.
Well, then that's a good segue. Look at you putting your host hat on. All right. So on this week's show, we are going to make the rounds. You know, I know there has been a lot of Harden talk on the stream. I feel like we're going to come at it from a different angle. For one, you know, Vinny's had really good coverage on this topic and has got a different perspective. You got the Law Clippers side. And then greater context, and Fred, you kind of just alluded to this, and this will be a little phase two part of the pod, is in my, like, reanalyzing the East a little bit. Again, I know it's early, small sample size theater, but, you know, the team that put it on Fred's Pacers was those Boston Celtics. 155, Drew Holiday fitting in incredibly well, you know, best net rating by a long shot in the league so far. Boston looking really good. But let's go to the story. It's okay for some stories that are this big to be the story of the week. Vinny, I'm going to throw it to you. You know, you and I have covered James for a very long time. A very divisive character, a very talented basketball player. The column you wrote on Yahoo Sports about player empowerment, I thought was very interesting because you know, thoughtful, good words all over the place, if you will. And the idea that, you know, there has been a narrative that, you know, player empowerment was out of control, so to speak. These players need to be controlled. And next thing you know, James Harden says, well, hold on a minute, you know, hold my beer. I'm going to go from Houston, Brooklyn, Philly, all the way over to the Clippers. I mean, first of all, geographically, my God, this dude is touching every corner of the state or the country. But he got his way, right? And he did it after, and I heard some of your perspective on your pod as well, after opting in, which was met with, you know, just eye rolls all over the NBA. Like, if you wanted your freedom, it's literally called free agency. So the freedom part comes with becoming a free agent. But no, you wanted your $35 million, $36 million, in addition to the Clippers stop, and it only took him 3 games. Unpack that a little bit for me. I mean, how surprised are you that he got what he wanted this early, and what do you think it means?
Well, first, before we do that, we have to say goodbye to Fred, or should I call him by his government name? I'm not sure if we're going to call him by his government name here, but
do it.
Bye, Matthew.
Little known fact, Vinny, you're breaking news on the pod. Fred's birth name is Matthew. I'm just going to put it out there, Fred.
There are 4 people in the world who call me Matthew.
There's more now.
My mother, Vinny Goodwill, or as Sam just dubbed him, Vinny Goodwords. I can't believe that you said good words amidst the Vinny Goodwords pun. And the 2 centers for the New York Knicks, Mitchell Robinson and Isaiah Hartenstein. Those are the 4 people in the world who call me Matthew. And that's it. So like I've got to go.
All right, I'm Matthew, thank you for joining.
I'll be sitting first class in honor of the Pacers offense.
I'm sure the Athletic loves hearing that.
And I'll talk to you guys soon.
See you, buddy.
See you, Fred. Well,
all right, Vincent, since we're going with birth names. There we go.
God, I hate that. And I hate my government name too. I think some people interpreted my column as like support of James Harden and saying, hey, I like how he gets down. I understand a lot of people rolling their eyes, but who's going to turn down $35 million when you thought that you were going to get the full max bag to take a mid-level exception, which I'm not even sure the Clippers had. This off, right. They had like a mid, a veterans minimum deal. Like, right. Who's going to take a $30 million pay cut? Like, that just doesn't seem, you know, feasible. And my point on James just as a whole is, I don't know if there's anybody to root for when you've got James on one side and Daryl Morey on the other. You know, if there is one executive that removes the people from the people business, is probably Daryl Morey in that way. And that's no shot to him. That's just the way that he's kicked it and it's been largely successful, except if you count getting to the finals or winning the championship or anything like that. I mean, other than that, he's been really, really successful. You know what I mean? But for James, I think we all looked at it and thought, if there's one player who's going to get his way this summer, it's going to be Damian Lillard. Because he's been the model employee, because he had such a great relationship. So we thought with the Portland Trailblazers, the city of Portland, and he had all the public, lack of better phrase, a goodwill with the public that made it seem like he would get to his destination after being the model citizen for so many years. While James has been a change my mind, I'll go here, I'll stay here. No, I won't. I want to go somewhere else. And I'll just try to zoom. I tried to zoom in a little bit on each of those individual situations while also saying it's only about 6 or 7 players in the league. As great as this league is with talent, it's maybe 6 or 7 guys that can go to their front office and say, get me out of here and here's where I want to go. Damian Lillard was all NBA last year and couldn't even get to where he wanted to go. You know what I mean? Like, and that's been a change in how we've seen NBA business conducted. So I think player empowerment, A, is a myth. And B, the whole thing about the pendulum swinging the other way, that's kind of a myth too.
I mean, before I throw it to Law, to your point, and you cited a bunch of examples in your column, the Milwaukee-Portland trade, I thought, you know, like in one shot, excuse me, hit on what you're talking about. Because on both sides of that deal, Dame doesn't get what he wants, goes to Milwaukee. Now he's happy that he's there, but it was he had to kind of reevaluate what he was happy with and didn't get what he asked for in Miami. But Jrue Holiday, who put in some incredible work with the Bucks, you know, and really, shoot, you win a title for that franchise first time in 50 years, you should be building a statue for this guy. Instead, you're shipping him out to Boston. And his wife, Lauren, obviously put a very heartfelt social media message out talking about the impact of trades on players and the dehumanization of some of these guys. And that's, you know, kind of powerful stuff that I think a lot of players can relate to. So you're right. More often than not, guys don't get what they want. Law, in this case, James gets what he wants. And the unique part from, you know, the LA standpoint, obviously, is it's pretty incredible that you're now talking about four guys who grew up in LA, you know, and really grew up around the same time, played high school ball in the LA area, now going to do their thing together. You talk about it's also wild because the Clippers brand, as you guys know, and I think they leaned way too hard into this, has been that whole streetlights over spotlights mentality, that anti-Lakers passive aggressiveness, you know, like we are the real LA. Like, my goodness, you literally went out and got four of the best LA basketball players of all time, put them together. Now, that sounds like I'm hyping it up. I'm not. That does not mean it's going to work. I think there's a lot of questions here. You know, how do you see this situation?
Basically, this is a situation where you're going to hear the word sacrifice a lot. Like, I feel like leadership and vibes was the theme in October. And I'm not saying I hated it, but I kept saying, don't think that guys being more open in press conferences and dancing when the music come on and start practice means that a trade not happening, you know? Well, now the trades happen and everyone's going to see to, you got these four guys who've all done special things with the basketball in their hands. So how are they going to play? And so I think when you have a team, and I learned this hanging around Kevin Durant a little bit over the summer, when he had his whole event with Boardroom, like the owners want to have a good team, but they also want to have a good story and they want to be able to connect. And maybe you can criticize Kawhi and PG for not always having the connection part outside of the fact that they're from LA. Well, you get Russ and Russell Westbrook in February. Maybe he's not the same player. Maybe his the decline from elite level play has been a lot more present. You know, we've discussed him ad nauseum, but he's still an impactful player and he can still be a positive player. Now you bring in James. He literally led the league in assists last year. You can see what they're going for. All the time that we were debating whether Russ was a good fit with the Clippers or not because of what Lawrence Frank would say about his guard situation, about always wanting the ball in PG and Kawhi's hands and having complementary players around them, especially at a point guard position that is not the point guard position that me and Vinny grew up with specifically. You know, you look at versus like Russ felt like the antithesis of that, but until you lose, still made that work. Now you get the guy that the front office actually was describing as the ideal player to play next to Paul and Kawhi, a guy who's a big guard in James, a great passer, a guy who can shoot, even though we're going to need to see a lot more catch and shoots. I think Lawrence Frank subtly bringing up how well James Harden shot the catch and shoot three is a tell about what they might be asking James to do. And at the same time, you also have to bring it back to Kawhi and Paul. Those guys, I brought it up talking about Russell Westbrook going into this Lakers game Wednesday night. Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are not like Anthony Davis and LeBron James. Anthony Davis is a paint-bound big who's not really spacing the floor all crazy. LeBron literally has been the NBA's best scorer of all time as far as volume goes. LeBron, like Kawhi, PG, those guys came into the league as 3-and-D guys on good teams. If there's anyone as far as star players at this stage of their career that is like, we're cool not having the ball, we're cool doing the little things, it's those two. That makes it easier for a guy like Russell to come in and do what he has been able to do. And now you have to do it again with James. It makes it easier on those guys. So I don't have the same concerns. It's going to be clunky because it's one basketball, but I think that the way this team is built, its culture around Kawhi and Paul, I think that makes things a lot easier for James to come in and integrate himself.
So more specifically, Law, how do you see the Westbrook use in terms of the, I mean, first of all, no clarity on whether he's going to start or come off the bench. You wrote a piece yesterday where you projected the starting lineup with him in there. You got Russ, you got James, you got Paul, Kawhi, and Zubac. You know, like you said, one ball, at least two ball dominant guys, four guys who definitely handle it. Paul and Kawhi have become better playmakers over the years. How do you see Ty Lue's plan on that front? And then contextualize that if you can with whatever insight you might have about Russ's mindset here. You know, it does appear and sound as if, you know, he was given the green light on you know, this deal itself and the idea that he wanted James in town and was willing to do whatever it took. That's a necessary component, but how do they go down that road?
I really just feel like T. Lou has always saw Russ as a leader on and off the floor. That obviously, I think we got too used to the Lakers handling Russ as the way it should be. And so everyone's like, yeah, of course Russ should come off the bench. So I just don't see Tyronn Lue going to Russ and saying, hey, we're going to put you out of the second unit. I think you can start guys and stagger them. I think there's going to be a heavy use of how T. Lue starts a game, and then 5 minutes in, he's probably going to get Russ out of there and bring him back with guys like Norman Powell, guys that he can have so that Russ can play his game and he can run with a Terrence Mann. He can help Norm get his – he can help the bigs with what they're trying to do as far as the pick-and-roll game. And then have a guy like James play a lot more with Kawhi and Paul over the course of the game when you're not staggering. But I think that a team's lineup is validated by its defense. And what Russ gives you as a point of attack guy with his energy, with him not having to be a 20-shot attempt guy like he has had to do in previous stuff of his career, Russ has already shown that he's willing to be a different kind of player with the Clippers than we saw with other rosters, with other coaches, with other stars. With James, I heard people think that James could come off the bench, you know, because he won a Sixth Man of the Year award. I don't think that's happening either.
James, that's not happening. Yeah, that is not happening.
So it's like when you look at it, it's like, yeah, I just feel like they're going to just start those four guys in the Vince Zubac, and T. Lou is just going to have to work on the rotations about how long he wants to play certain guys together, how he's staggering. The Clippers have rarely staggered this season, but I also think it was because T. Lou's trying to get certain dudes in shape and he's just trying to win games.
Right.
Now that this deal is done, let's just be real. Like, all things considered, this team should stay out the play-in tournament pretty safely here, even given how good the West is.
They have a month or two.
Here comes Vinny. All right, Vinny, let's hear it.
That's why you get James.
Yeah.
That's why you get James. You get James because this dude wins regular season games.
Yes, he does.
All the critiques that we have about James, about how he doesn't come through in the playoffs, how he doesn't come through late in those type of games, that'll be an issue that we talk about 6 months from now or 4 or 5 months from now. Like, for right now, you get James as a luxurious insurance policy for all of the other stars that you already have. The floor is raised when you have all those guys because you know that together they got to figure it out. One of those guys out, it makes it easier for those other guys to say, all right, I'm going to take the team on the back and we're going to still compete at a high level.
But Vinny's still not sure. Vinny's still not sure. What do you think, man?
I don't think we can be sure about anything in the Western Conference short of the Denver Nuggets.
Sure.
Right? Like, because the West is so deep, I just think it's it's a tribute, not an indictment of the Clippers when I say that, because you have Oklahoma City, you have Golden State figuring things out. The only real disappointing team in the West that I can say is probably Memphis to this point.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And they're without Ja, and they're without Steven Adams and Brandon Clark. I mean, and two of those things aren't going to change this year. But the West is loaded. So when you're saying six, you've got to tell me out of Denver, Golden State, the Lakers, Phoenix, the Clippers, Oklahoma City. Like that's six right there without even including like Sacramento and Dallas, who's perfect. Now we're at eight.
Sure.
Then you count New Orleans. Like, it's just so deep, and it's hard for me to pinpoint, but I agree with what you're saying. The logic on getting James Harden is this is not a May and June move. This is a get us to April move. And then if you're helping us in May and June, it's gravy.
Well, because, and that's when, and you hit on this on your pod, Vinny, is it, that's when James is a third option, is a game changer in the playoffs. That's fine. Yep. Like, you go ahead and hit a couple big shots throughout the course of a series, fine. As long as the top two guys are playing well, you're in good shape. Let me say, though, all right, I hear you. For the purposes of this conversation, let's go ahead and say they get in the playoffs, because it would be a disaster if they don't. You don't do this kind of a move. You know, Steve Ballmer doesn't walk around dreaming about coming in second place. So are they going to be lifting the trophy or not? Like, the idea of winning the entire thing, and I know, you know, you're talking a lot to unpack there, but, you know, does this potentially look like a championship team to you, or is it just window dressing?
I mean, you can be a championship team and not win a championship, right?
Yeah, seen that.
You know what I mean? I have yet to see anybody in the league come up with an answer for that big goober in Denver, and I said it affectionately. Okay, I said it affectionately. Who has come with an answer? Like I don't know.
Some call him the Joker.
Yeah. Literally,
the goober.
Look, if Big Vic is like Jason Voorhees, where you everywhere you look, you turn around and he's there. Then Nikola Jokic, he is literally like a real life Joker who gets Batman in the end. You know what I mean? Like, he's the one that wins at the end. But I think, and Sam, you can agree with you, Sam, you're older than us, and I don't mean that.
Damn.
I don't mean it in that way. You actually look young. You know what I mean?
Thank you,
buddy. You know what they say, white don't crack, right?
Yeah,
unless you crack.
It rolls right off the tongue. Yeah.
But in a given year, I think there are maybe three championship teams. Maybe like three teams that even in hindsight, you look at it and say, these teams were championship level quality. It's not always the two teams that make the finals either. It's just three teams in a given year that you can look at through their patterns through the regular season and how they've conducted themselves to look like a championship team. I feel like Denver's one of them. I feel like maybe Boston is one, but I'm not completely sure because I'm not sure. And I
clearly
trust them
Minnesota
in the playoffs.
With the way they put it on Denver last night, right, Vinny?
I mean, clearly, you know, a team with Carl Towns, that screams out championship, right? You know what I mean?
That was a good win, though.
But yeah, it was
a great win.
It was a great win. Look, any unexpected win in the Western Conference this year will be met by applause by the other teams. Because every game is going to mean something in a way. But to your point, I do think that this puts the Clippers in better position. But do you trust the Clippers more than you trust Phoenix? I think that might be the question.
I do right now. I mean, like, listen, Bradley Beal hadn't hit the floor. Devin Booker's played one game. Kevin Durant's incredible, but he's not a young man.
And that Phoenix team, here's a big thing. Like, T. Lewis, who is someone that he enhances – the parts that he has, T. Lou has not finished the season with Kawhi and Paul healthy. The fact that T. Lou's the one who has to keep repeating that, that has weighed on him. But I've seen the Clippers play. I've seen Phoenix play. I mean, the late game execution from the Clippers is why they have losses. You can say that for the Suns as well. But the Suns, you know, they just got to hope they get their guys healthy. I just don't feel like the Suns are going to be better than the sum of their parts. And I think there's a way where the T. Lou makes things happen when he finally gets these guys.
He's the best coach in basketball, if we're being honest.
Well, and here's so shameless preview. If I do my job today, I'm going to have a piece tomorrow with scouts. You know, I do this occasionally. It's always kind of fun. Anonymous scouts weighing in on, can James Harden fit in with the Clippers? And I'm going to quote one of them here. He's talking about all the different, he's pretty cynical on the deal. And he says, I don't know, man. I just don't understand it from a Clippers standpoint. So that's where we're going to see how good Ty Lue is, right? He's going to have to figure this thing out. So, you know, that's his reputation precedes him. Fantastic reputation. You know, obviously part of that Team USA staff now as well. And this is an interesting inflection point for Ty, because as you guys know, last season, he was quietly and at times not all that quietly frustrated with being the coach of a load management team where he just wanted guys to compete and wanted guys to be available and wanted to play basketball. And, you know, and he always kind of pushed back on that idea that he was really frustrated, but, you know, it was a thing where I think, you know, he wanted to have his guys and he wanted to see what they could be, what they could do. Now you've got even more. And I mean, shoot, last night, Kawhi and PG are playing on the second night of a back-to-back. This is a whole new Clippers world, and it's one that I think Ty is better equipped for.
And if anything, it's why the issue with last year, he connected with his stars. I think he started to lose connection with his other guys, the role players who they had their roles jerked around to the point where guys didn't know whether they were playing, what position they were going to be playing, all those things, because T. Lou kind of prioritized guys like Kawhi and Paul and Russ when he got there. I think T. Lou's made a significant effort to be better in that regard, but this is a trade that tests that. I mean, we're going to talk about James, but we're, you know, what's going to happen with Terrence when he finally gets back from injury? Dude was named a starter, and of course he gets hurt at the wrong time. Terrence is jumping back into a new team. What's going to happen with him? He's the guy whose role gets switched around all the time. You know, guys like Bones Highland, guys like Norman Powell, who I'm just going to be real. Norman Powell and James Harden are kind of redundant on this roster. It's the most redundant case of guys who are still on the team than anybody else. Even Paul and Kawhi can kind of differentiate themselves. So it's those players where it's like, we're going to see how T. Lou continues to consistently communicate and put other guys in position to succeed.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City, with David, a sculptor, and his wife Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful, designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son, Evan, continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and Cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, guys, good stuff on all things Clippers, Harden, Sixers. I'm going to jump back out east. And Vinny, this is your kind of one of your many strong suits here is the good old Eastern Conference. I know it's early again, qualifier, disclaimer. But man, we are all ready to put the NBA trophy in Milwaukee, right?
Yes, and, we were.
And Dame and you took a trip out there in the preseason. I caught up with those guys when they came through LA. We wrote a bunch of words, we said a bunch of things, and almost all of them were complimentary. So here is the early struggles that we probably could have seen coming a little bit. How many times with a quote unquote super team do we have to get reminded that it takes a minute? But as we sit here talking today, they have got the 29th defensive rating in the NBA, 119 points allowed per game. Just a shade, by the way, speaking of shade, a shade above Fred Katz's Pacers, 119.3 at 30th, and just above the Wizards. This is not good company to be keeping on the defensive end of the floor, where the Mike Budenholzer Bucks, buttered their bread back in the Drew Holiday days. 24th in net rating, minus 6.6. You're talking about close wins over Philly, Miami, bad losses to Atlanta and Toronto. In those two games, giving up 127 to the Hawks, 130 to the Raptors. By the way, the offensively anemic Raptors, who have just been dying on that end of the floor, giving you 130. Chris Middleton, just to give a little more context, coming off that knee surgery in the summer, only playing 17 minutes per game and has only played 3 of the 4 games. Dame has been on a roller coaster ride with his performance, had some great moments and then had a couple bad nights. What are we seeing there? And more kind of broadly speaking, what do we think about the East? Because we had Milwaukee and Boston. Boston's killing. We'll get to them in a minute. That Mr. Holiday is doing his thing out there. But what are you seeing out of the Bucks so far?
Well, I think you spoke it up. I mean, last year they were top five in defensive rating. Last year, I think they were like fourth. And Adrian Griffin, who is a critical element of this puzzle, right? We focus so much on Dame and on Giannis, and even to a lesser extent on Chris Middleton because he hasn't been healthy, because he looks like the missing piece on the floor, that we don't even talk about the adjustments that comes in when you're bringing in a first-year head coach to a championship-level team, and then you throw in Damian Lillard, who is the antithesis of Drew Holiday defensively. Like, Drew Holiday could cover up a lot of ills with point-of-attack defense and being able to get into the passing lanes. He has a lot of length that can sort of cover up and play to the way that Bud Ball liked to play. Like, they weren't aggressive last year, but you had a wild card in Drew that could get into the passing lanes, make things a little more difficult. Now you've got Dame, who's not defensively inclined, and Adrian Griffin is saying, we're going to be more physical, we're going to be more aggressive. And that takes time to change a defensive identity that's been largely successful because of the playoff failures. Mind you, they won a championship, but because of the playoff failures, you got to go a different direction. And usually when you break up with one girlfriend, the next girlfriend is the total opposite, right? You don't know about that life, Sam, but I'm just telling you, as a single man, that is usually how it has gone. And I have been the boyfriend that's been the total opposite of the last boyfriend.
So you're basically like the GM who, you know, you hear this from coaching agents that you know, like you just hit on, like every team ends up going the opposite direction. So Vinny, the GM of his love life. Is what love life a little bit?
But yeah, exactly. Yeah, what love life? No, it's like that head coaching chair is vacant. You know what I mean? Like it's like Terry Stotts just quit. but don't discount that part as well. Not that Terry Stotts was some great defensive mind, but the experience of someone who has been a head coach for nearly 10 years, you didn't replace him. That's like very jarring for a team. Then you add in Chris Middleton. Then you got Dame dying on screens. Then you get Giannis, and we got to ask our questions here. How do I put this? Usually MVP players win them in clusters, with the exception of Michael Jordan, who's an alien of all aliens. But Larry Bird won his three MVPs in a row. Magic Johnson won 3 in 4 years. Steph won 2 in a row. LeBron won 4 in 5 years. Usually it happens in a very concentrated period of time in a modern NBA. I probably named damn near 20 MVPs of those 4 or 5 guys in the last 35 years. Giannis's height of 19 and 20, and then he became a champion, you know, a year later. Can Giannis reach that high on being an MVP player on offense, an MVP player on defense? Can we expect him to be that? Because I feel like Giannis covered a lot of ills with the Milwaukee Bucks, a lot of structural ills, just because he was so athletic, so great, and oftentimes so random. But if he is 95% of that player, how much worse does that make the Bucks?
Yeah, those are fair questions. It's wild to me that, you know, and I wrote about this, like when this trade went down, you know, they'd been kicking around the idea of Dame for years, but it was not happening. They were not pursuing it until they got word from Dame's camp that he would be happy and comfortable coming that way. So then they kick it into high gear, and then they spend the better part of 2 weeks looking at this thing from every angle. Obviously, a big part of that is the Bucks studying their own defense, studying their own defensive history, studying the questions that you are now raising. They, you know, they stated the obvious. They got to a conclusion that Damian Lillard makes us better, and that the offensive benefits that come with him, you know, that they supersede the defensive weaknesses that might come, because he's no Drew Holiday, and that's not a knock. Drew is one of one. But you know, again, early returns might take a while. Eventually, maybe they get it there. But this is even uglier than I think we could have expected.
I think the defense that you guys brought up, Vinny, you talked about Adrian being an opposite of what Bud was doing, being more physical, being more aggressive. And you know, it's funny, the Bucks, I feel like, are actually executing that part of what they wanted to accomplish. They are forcing a whole lot more turnovers. They're not killing themselves with fouls. But the fact that a Toronto Raptors team that couldn't score on the Blazers, right, was able to score as easily as they did. The Raptors had 35 assists last night. And you know what? The Raptors still turned the ball over a lot. They had 18 turnovers, to the point. The concern that I have with the Bucks, Brooke Lopez was a Defensive Player of the Year candidate last year, even at the stage of career that he was in. And it's because he was put in position by the defense that the Bucks employed, a contained heavy defense. The Bucks were dead last in trying to force turnovers last year, but they did everything else well. And they parked Brooke at a point where it's like you're not scoring over him. And you have Giannis as that rotating four, you know, that elite help defender. I think the Bucks are all over the place. They are still big, so they're rebounding decent enough. They're forcing more turnovers. They're not killing themselves on fouls. The Toronto Raptors defense of last year, that Adrian Griffin was on that staff, they would do the same things, but they were smaller and they bled threes. And eventually they got to the point where it's like, me, Jakob Poeltl. And Jakob Poeltl didn't even help them. Brooke is all over the place. His rim protection was elite last year. To begin this year, the Bucks are the worst rim protecting team in the NBA. That is a concern, because the only solution is to either adjust to your player or to change the players. and you just gave Brooke the bag and signed his twin to be on the team. I don't know if you changing players, man, like Chris Middleton. I don't know if you're changing players, and it doesn't look like we're getting full strength Chris anytime soon.
No.
Dame is here. Giannis is here. You're starting Malik Beasley, and again, you're paying everybody else. I don't see how they can change the players. So this is going to be very interesting for Adrian Griffin, because we've seen coaches get hired and then a year later teams decide to make a decision. I'm not saying that that should be imminent, but that's the biggest test for Adrian Griffin right now. Like, he's accomplishing what he wants to accomplish as a defense as far as a factor, but as far as the overall effectiveness, those players are out of position, and it's the oldest team in the league. If this is an issue now, you know, in November, what's it going to look like when winter starts, the injuries start hitting, the road trips start grinding? The bodies aren't going to be more crisp, you know, come February and March. So that's what I'm looking at. I think the offense will take care of itself. I think there's talent. They're going to win games off of that alone. But what Adrian's trying to do defensively, it's some things, the things he wants is working. But overall, I don't know if it fits the team.
Guys, my last thought on this point before I'm going to get to some 1 weekend takeaways and get your guys' thoughts around the league a little more. But I've always found Giannis's choice interesting on how he uses his voice. Earlier in his career, you know, remember the infamous bubble loss to the Heat when they're just throwing the wall at him time and again, when he's not guarding Jimmy Butler, when that was a thing. And you know, that's a younger version of Giannis, but it's only a couple years ago. And I remember asking him, you know, if he asked for that Jimmy Butler assignment, and in general, like how he used his voice with Bud. And he has always been, you hear that term, coachable, and that is conceivably a good thing. But I think with Giannis, there have been times when you could argue that he was too coachable. This feels like, as the guy who has won Defensive Player of the Year, as the guy who is the absolute captain of this program, that if this trend continues on the defensive end and everything you and Law, Vinny, said lands about scheme and about identity and about the fact that personnel is not changing, these are their dudes. Like, at some point, Giannis is going to have to very forcefully share his perspective and figure out as a leader what tweaks and changes have got to be made schematically, because they know how to do this. Like, Bud taught them the system, fine. Him being gone doesn't mean they can't go back to elements that made them successful in the past. And the stakes are too high. You cannot make this trade and have it just absolutely fall on its face. Again, we're talking about 4 games. This time of year, there's always opinions and takes that we look back on months later that look silly. Maybe this will be one, and maybe they figure it out. But really interesting stuff early on. All right, let me pivot one last time, guys. Law, I know you got to get moving here in a minute. I was going to dive in to the Celtics, but I don't want to just do that. That's going to be my thing as far as 1 weekend takeaways, just things that have jumped out to you guys, because there's been a bunch of interesting stuff going on. So I'll start in terms of things that they certainly got your attention, and it's in the context of the Bucks. You know, Drew Holiday, gets shipped off to Boston. He's their fourth leading scorer right now, fitting in, you know, fine on the offensive end, shooting at a high percentage. Porzingis obviously playing really well. Jason Tatum looking like an MVP candidate. Again, Jaylen Brown doing his thing. Early dominance has got the Celtics. I'm trying to cheat here and look at the numbers. They're 4-0, one of only two undefeated teams. Dallas is also 4-0. Why can't I find the damn numbers? Now Schlecht is going to have to edit. All right, officially editing time. Hold on.
Stop laughing, baby.
No, I like that he's just said, you know what? Schleck is going to edit this. No, that is a bet move, baby. I like that. That is a bet
move. All right, and we back. We're good. All right. Best net rating in the league at 20.1 for the Drew Holiday Boston Celtics. As an aside, Law, the Clippers are second at 11.6. Who needs James Harden? Defensive rating of 104.7 is seventh. Best offense in the league, right above Dallas, 124.8. They look dominant. They look great. Again, I don't know if I mentioned this. They put it on the Pacers last night, Fred Katz, but Boston looking good. They've got Joe Mazzulla in year number two. They added Jeff Van Gundy as a consultant. You know, they've been doing this for a minute. Boston's going to be incredibly dangerous. I'm not exactly having a hot take there. for you guys, Law, I'll throw it to you. You know, the only rule for you is you cannot talk Clippers. What else has jumped out at you, positive or negative, one weekend?
I brought up the Suns earlier, and again, I know they're missing Bradley Beal. I know they're missing Devin Booker. I really wonder how that roster changes or how the coaching staff adjusts when they are down somebody who has to make major moves in their offense. I think that San Antonio Spurs game, they really had no business losing that game, but it's the second time that the Suns have basically just gone belly up in the fourth quarter of a game. I think it's an interesting conversation about roster construction overall. The Suns completely punted the traditional point guard position, which that's cool if you got Book, who, I mean, even in the game that they played against the Warriors to open the season at Chase, like, the Suns had ups and downs in that game. They were relatively inconsistent. They won that game because Devin Booker closed the door with his playmaking, with his ability to understand that Kevin Durant is somewhere else in the corner and he can make the pick and roll play and set guys up. But I feel like the role of a point guard who's not a star, and there's decreasing numbers of those type of players in this league today. How are those guys going? How do you have a team where you don't have one of those guys at all? And so that's something that I'll look at with the Suns. And the Spurs was interesting to bring it up because they have a big experiment. I know we're talking about Victor Wembanyama just overall. And by the way, he's more slender man apparently than Jason Voorhees, right, Vinny? So he comes
Big
in
Slim
the Phoenix.
Big Slim is what I call him. Big Slim.
That costume was great on Halloween. But again, the Suns were they should have won that game easily. Trey Jones, who I don't think anyone thinks of Trey Jones as an elite point guard or anything like that. Trey Jones is your typical journeyman. You know, in football, we talk about journeyman quarterbacks. Like, Trey Jones is a game manager type of point guard. But the value of him has come through in both of San Antonio's wins. When they close with him and have Jeremy playing like anything other than someone who's touching the ball more than, you know, Victor Wembanyama, like, the Spurs offense has been able to win these games. And it's just an interesting thing to watch because teams love to talk about how positionless they are, but the traditional aspect of how guys come up and playing still gives some coaches some comfort, still gives star players the ability to say, okay, we're going to be put in the best positions to do what we do well on the offensive end of the floor. That's an early season trend, and I'm sure it'll shape how teams adjust their rosters as the winter comes on.
Can I rant on positionless basketball for a second? Just a real quick one. I'm going to sound like an old man. I'm not old, but maybe I'm going to sound like an old
I'll
man.
I'll be the judge of that.
I'll let you know.
I'm the CEO of that.
You'll let me know. When you have big people that do little guard things, but don't do big people things, you still need big people, right? Right? Like, if you got a big man that shoots 10 threes a game and says, I'm the greatest shooting big man of all time, but can't protect the rim and doesn't rebound, you know what you need? You need Rudy Gobert.
Right.
You know, so, like, that positionless basketball stuff, I get it. And if you have, like, if you don't have a point guard, but you need guys to be set up, like, the one thing about a guy like Kevin Durant, I don't want him having to create his own shot as much as he has to at this stage of his career. You know what would really help Kevin Durant? A nice offensive structure that once it swings the ball to him, the defense is off balance and he can do his thing without having to stare down the barrel at, you know, somebody nipping and stripping and everything else. So positionless basketball sounds really, 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 really good, but there's still roles on the floor that need to be filled. And if you don't have those roles, I don't give a damn what positionless basketball is. That's just a cute term because you still need big people doing big things. Like, it's just dumb. I think it's just the way people be dumb.
Positionless is a scam, man. It allows players to say that they don't have any specific responsibilities. They got to do everything. It allows coaches to not have to talk about what they're doing with these lineups. They can just say, hey, we're trying something out. And it allows front offices to say, you know, we're just collecting talent and we're going to have the coaching staffs figure it out.
To that point, I was watching the highlights of the Pelicans win over OKC last night, because admittedly, I was trying to catch up on the season-long topic of Chet Holmgren versus Victor Wembanyama. And late in the game, they were like five out, and Chet is just chilling in the right corner. You know, like, that's your big, that's your seven-footer. And he's literally out there looking like P.J. Tucker. So, point well made, Vinny.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, week one takeaway for Vinny.
Week one takeaway for Vinny. I'm intrigued by two teams. I'm going to start with the bad. I'm intrigued by the Chicago Bulls because they look like an outright mess.
You're okay? So on brand. I'm so proud of you. Of course, you got to come with a Bulls take. I said you're so on brand.
You know what's one funny?
Former Bulls beat writer.
I gained an affinity for the Bulls because people thought I was like some type of bad boys infiltrator. Like, this is 1991 or some shit. You know what I mean? Like, when I first got there, it was the weirdest thing of all time. Like, you're going to go and tell our secrets to who? Joe Dumars and Mark Aguirre? Like, that's what we're doing here? But either way, right? The Bulls are a hot mess to me. Like, because Lonzo Ball is out, like, that feels like a convenient sort of reason for why things aren't working. But when you have Zach LaVine said it was not a team meeting, but it was a group of players getting together, or players getting together, and they didn't want the coaches to be involved. That does not sound like a vote of confidence for anything when it happens after the first game. Like, a lot of times we've been around and we've not let in the locker room because players are talking amongst themselves, and we don't, it's not called a team meeting or whatever it is, but usually that happens like January or December. That happens when a team decides collectively, we're not as good as we think. That doesn't happen after the first game. There's too much optimism. There's too much sober realism for you to say, we've got 81 games left and we've got problems right now. That just strikes me as something that we need to be paying attention to. Like, DeMar DeRozan and the Bulls didn't come to terms on an extension. Vucevic was talking about not getting touches. They don't have a point guard. They're waiting on Patrick Williams. Like I'm still waiting on Patrick Williams. Like, I was a Patrick
Williams. Still waiting on Patrick Williams.
I will die on that vine. I thought Patrick Williams was going to be like a guy, and I was wrong, right? And then you go to Dallas, 4-0. They traded for Derek Lively in the draft, and he looks like a stud. He looks like a dude. Even though he's not playing a ton of minutes right now, but he's filling a big hole for them. And everybody who was telling me Luka Doncic for MVP, I'm like, Luka Doncic has to play on a good team for him to win MVP. Well, he's shutting Vinny up on that, right? And I don't know how the fit will work between he and Kyrie Irving, but I do know that Jason Kidd is a really hard-driving coach, and if those players respond to that, that actually might be something.
You know what's funny about that game is the Dallas Mavericks have that lottery pick because they punted that late season game to the Bulls. Okay.
Yep.
Bulls would have probably loved to flip, because you know what the Bulls didn't have this year? A lottery pick that they had to donate to the Orlando Magic, in part because of the Nikola Vucevic trade, who they extended. And now Vinny is saying he's complaining about touches. He got plenty of touches. He had a 2020 game and they still lost. That's the state of the Bulls right now.
Yeah, the Bulls feel like nobody wants to say it out loud, but like what they, the road they went down, the plan that was in place, it looked good for a minute. You know, they had that fast start last year, and then it was pretty evident that it just wasn't going anywhere. When you come into a season with guys like DeMar and Zach LaVine already being in trade rumors, that's not great for the culture. That's not great for the vibe. You know, if you talk about, to take it all the way back to Philly, you know, that idea that they're going to go try to find another guy. You know, Zach's name comes up a lot in those kind of conversations. We're talking 2-3 games in. That's not typically the kind of environment that you can come back from. So the Bulls, it's been a weird turnaround, because you got Arturis Karnisevic getting a lot of credit right out the gate for being bold and adding these guys, you know, and Billy Donovan now, in terms of voice, it does. I don't remember exactly what his contract is, but it feels like
he Billy got extended fantastic. Last year, and the extension doesn't kick in until next year.
Ooh-wee. All right, so Billy's fine, but it does feel like in order for his voice to land like it used to, you might have to get some new, you know, faces around there. So, yeah, those are good ones. All right, gentlemen, we have taken up a bunch of your time. We made the rounds. We got Mr. Matthew Katz on here talking about the Pacers. More importantly, we got Vinny on. Vinny, I'm forgetting, like, is this the debut on the pod?
No, I've been on.
You came on before. That's right. Okay.
I've been on before.
All right. Memory failing me. You know, the old folks. It's all memory.
I'm your non-athletic black friend.
Good Lord. Between that and white don't crack, you're giving it to me today. Your white friend's probably blushing right now. All right. I appreciate you guys. This was good stuff. We'll have you on for a third time some other time now that I, you know, remembered how to count. Law, you know, go do your job, man. You've been sleeping at the wheel. Like, I'm not seeing content coming from you. You know, where you been lately, man?
Hey, all I'm saying is I got a red eye to New York Friday night, and it was because I wasn't going to get Friday news dumped by this team that I've been around. So, yeah.
That's right. That was your plan to not, you know.
That man is chugging orange juice like he had a hangover.
Are we sure he doesn't? Because I wouldn't blame him for drink a little bit after that Laker Clipper OT, you know, affair after this week he's had.
Hey, you know, I've never had alcohol before.
That's right.
I got the OJ.
I like it. OJ's much better for you. I got my coffee, my caffeine over here, my water. All right, guys, I'm gonna let you roll. Thank you. Thank you for everybody for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.